As a British journalist, I cannot go back to England without asking this question.
Wow, bro. We always have athletes in here. We always have celebrities. But now we got someone smart enough to write a whole book. Yeah, go for it. There he is.
You're the first author to hit that button.
Absolutely. No. I think I'm going to like this book because I hope there's photos in it because it's called More Than Just a Shirt. It's called More Than a Shirt.
Yes. And I also love that you're like, we always have athletes. So I'm going to confirm that this is definitely not an athlete. Yeah.
No, definitely not. But when you see him, you're going to be like, that's an author. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only. Put your hands together for Joey Dorso, everybody. Dorso.
Joey Dorso.
There you go.
People are like, this is not an athlete.
No. Is he a reggae DJ, the way he's hitting that war horn?
Thanks so much for coming by. I mean, it's always, you're in town from, where in the UK do you live?
Birmingham.
Home of the Europa League champions.
That's right.
So European champions.
You were just saying that you were in Istanbul.
Best night of my life. Yeah. Aston Villa 3, Freiburg 0.
With
Prince William.
With the Prince. Yeah.
Hanging out with the Royals.
There's an amazing video of him. Just pulls out these two podcast guys. Have you seen this? And I kind of know them. It's just a Villa podcast. It's very, and they're kind of like, can we get a picture? And he just knows them. He's like, I listen to you. And they're like, what?
The royal family is listening to me.
He's you know, when this thing first came up, people were a bit skeptical. Like, is he just trying to be a bit, you know, down with the people? He is legit. Like, he knows a lot.
Really?
Okay.
How does the royal family pick a team? Because wasn't the Queen of England before her passing? May she rest in peace.
Well, people said West Ham because
I thought she was an Arsenal fan.
Really? I think a lot of people want to claim her.
Yeah,
classy lady.
I mean, now we got to figure out how do we get
everyone's an
no one. Fan. Yeah, no one's mad.
How do we get JD Vance to listen to our podcast?
Please don't.
We're working on that right now.
Actually, show the book. Why don't we show the book?
Yeah. More Than a Shirt. Okay,
I realize it's a terrible title for this wonderful country.
You can show it right here.
It should be More Than a Jersey.
Yeah, More Than a Shirt. How football shirts explain global politics, money, and power, which you would, of course, say soccer jerseys.
That's right.
So, terribly.
Also, we don't want you explaining power and money. No. Okay. It's America. That's all allowed here.
So give us the quick for our audience, the elevator pitch or whatever you sent in the press release to let people know about the book. I have a couple questions, but I want to give you that.
So the idea is football shirts explain the world. So like, you know, you're wearing JVC. I haven't prepped this. JVC, Arsenal, there's so many Japanese electronic sponsors of Britain in the 1980s. Yep. You had Sharp Manchester United. Yep. You had Hitachi, Liverpool, NEC and Everton. And that was because loads of Japanese companies were trying to sell kit to English households. But football wasn't globalized at that point. 20th century, you've got airlines, you've got Gulf oil states. I mean, one I particularly like is Gazprom. Do you remember which team?
Of course. Zenit St. Petersburg had it. Schalke had it.
And basically I went there and like through the story of that one shirt, the Schalke shirt, I think you can basically tell the story of the war in Ukraine. And I love the way that football shirts from all over the world. I went to Colombia and I found a shirt with a dead gangster's face on the back, who was a sort of Pablo Escobar protege who owned a football club. And like all these crazy stories you can tell through football shirts. And I went all over the world. I went to Houston, Texas. I went to Colombia, India, Qatar.
What the hell did you find out about in Houston, Texas?
Eat the mic a little bit. Yeah. A cancer hospital. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, MD Anderson. Because they make a lot of profit. You have to pay. My wife is an oncology nurse as well here. You have to pay for healthcare here. So.
Yeah, well, I knew that but it's a private business and it's trying to get money. So that's interesting. And also just the story of the US and football in general. And I've been to New York a lot. I've been to California, but I wanted to go to Texas and see the sort of, you know, whatever you call it, barbecue, flyover country.
Sure. Is this your first time visiting like all these? I mean, not the U.S. You've been to U.S. before.
I've been to U.S. a lot, but I've been to the kind of liberal places on the coast. I've never been to Texas.
Yeah, you're hanging out with the elites, the coastal elites, if you will.
It's interesting because I say this all the time as a soccer fan, as a football fan in the U.S. And we're obviously very liberal, progressive people, especially being from Brooklyn, New York. Mm. But being in this space, soccer fans in the United States are pretty extremely liberal. So we can go to these very red states, conservative towns, but then we hang out with the soccer community and then we're like, hey, why are people talking about Texas? Everybody's mad chill out here.
Right. Yeah, although that's my question for you. I'm trying to understand that. That's changing, right? Or surely if soccer wants to grow in this country, it has to reach people who voted for Donald Trump, right? Like, they're the people who don't like it right now, and probably, but that's changing, right? It doesn't.
It is. I think there's also some of the players are also. Joey,
just don't block your face.
Oh, sorry.
Wrong hand. You could use the other hand.
You can use because I'm self-conscious. Yeah.
You're gorgeous. The mic.
You know, your caps. That caps reminded me. I saw a guy. I think he was on my flight. Wearing an Arsenal red cap.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to be careful wearing red caps in this country.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Especially on an airplane when you see the back of the head. I'm going to see the front. See if I agree. Also, I just love the fact that it says Gooners now and people look at me like, do you know what that means? I don't think you know what I'm referencing, but.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah. I want some
dude. I just learned about that. That's horrible.
Some guy with like a ponytail, like a greasy ponytail and like a herpes lip is going to be like, yes.
Would you rather be MAGA cap or Gooner?
Oh, Gooner all day. I don't care if this could have white stains all over it. I'd rather that than a MAGA cap. But to answer your question, I think the tide is turning a little bit in that sense, but I also feel like it's so different than in Europe. You know, like in Europe, I think there's a lot of teams that are very, very right wing. And there's, you know, some, I've had conversations with people about football in England where I'm like, oh, we do not agree on a lot of things. And I just realized now you have your head shaved. You know what I mean? There's stuff like that. Where I think in the US that you're not going to find that. Maybe you'll laugh at this, but in the US for a long time, it was considered like the intellectuals sport.
Yeah. And in England, it's not. And even though
it's
there's
the
so
exact
much
exact opposite. Yeah.
And that's in the last, you know, so like in the very kind of working class. And then in the 80s, it was, you know, a lot of hooliganism and violence and Hillsborough. And then in the 90s, the Premier League, it became much more kind of corporate and clean and whatever else. And there's still, but I think it's still, you know, when I go and watch Aston Villa, it's still, like, I think, deeply rooted in geography and place in the same families that have been going for years. And even at Arsenal, you know, like that's still there.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I remember the first time I went with my wife. My wife surprised me. I was a struggling comedian at the time. I couldn't afford to go. My wife bought me an Arsenal kit and I opened it up. It was the 2010, if I'm not mistaken. 2011, actually. And
is that a nice Puma number?
No. It was Nike. They had the black sash down the arm. I remember I opened it and fluttered out of it. It was like, you're going to an Arsenal game. And I was like, oh, babe, somebody scammed you. They don't play in New York. They play in London. I thought she didn't know it. She's like, yeah, you idiot. We're going to fucking London. I was like, oh my God. Like, I couldn't believe it. And I remember everyone was like, are you going with your wife? Yeah, don't go down Holloway Road.
Right.
You go to the Tollington. You guys will be better off there.
Okay.
And they were like trying to avoid like the old school hooligan bars, you know? And it wasn't as much by that point. I think by the time we went, it was 2012, but it really wasn't like a huge deal at that point, but there were still some inklings about it, you know?
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is that there's a lot of snobbery traditionally towards football in England from, you know, rugby and cricket fans and people who actually think just normal working class people with a bit of an accent who work in a manual job are like racists and hooligans, and they're actually not at all. So I think it's like kind of all those things. There's a lot of different subcurrents there. There's a lot of sort of traditional sort of upper middle class British society kind of turn their nose up at it. Yeah. And I think that's changed in the last 10 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because like, here soccer was gay for so long.
That was the thing.
We were all just gay for liking the sport.
In England, it's gay if you don't like it.
Right.
Yeah. It's so funny to think of it as like not a tough sport. And then like, you know, I'm watching Eric Cantona kick a guy in the first round. I'm like, I think you'd be surprised at what happens in the sport, but I guess you don't use your hands, so it's not a big deal. But thinking about What do you think you learned? What was like the most intriguing thing that you learned from writing this book? Because I'm sure you found out a lot of information you didn't know ahead of time.
Yeah, I think just my main takeaway is you can find stories in any shirt. Like, I don't know what you're wearing. What is this?
This is Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yeah,
it's a USL championship. Tampa Bay also NASL, the North American Soccer League. This was one of the
Sam Allardyce played for the Tampa Bay
Rowdies. Really?
One of the prime teams.
Pint of Wine, you remember
that? Yeah, Pint of Wine, while he was trying to get third-party ownership. Of course. Was he manager for one day?
He's actually an underappreciated tactical genius.
Yeah, because he was one of the first people to use data.
Yeah, and like early level
XG. Was it Reaps? Was that guy, the guy who wore like the light on the top of his head, who was like the, was it the point of, what's it like, the PMO or something like that?
I don't know.
God damn it. The point, he was the guy who told all of England, like, just kick it as far as you can.
Because he studied in, like, Florida or something.
Because he went Tampa Bay route.
Yeah. Cool story. In Florida. Yeah.
They use the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is the NFL team.
Yeah,
they use
Glazers.
They use, well, not back then, but they use their training facility. And Sam Allardyce said he was sitting there smoking a cigarette. And one of the trainers from the Tampa Bay Rowdies walked up to him and said, hey, I saw you kind of stretching your calf out. What's going on? He said, no, it's not my calf or whatever it was. He said, I have something in my quad from an injury in England. The doctors say they can't do anything about it. He said, why don't you come in? And he didn't realize that when they opened the doors, there was like a hospital in there. It was like an MRI machine or whatever it was back then, like an x-ray. And they found scar tissue from him not having massaged it out early enough. So he was like, I think I could take care of that for you. He said it completely changed. Like, it added like 3 more years to his career.
Yeah.
Just be, and he was also like, stop smoking cigarettes, dude. Like, you're running.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, seeing, look, I haven't read your book yet, but just seeing the description of it, it makes me, I read a few books, like How Soccer Explains the World. There's a couple other books about just the kind of geopolitical connections to the game, but I've never really heard it discussed based from a shirt or shirt sponsors and stuff like that. But it makes me think about, I don't know if you saw that report this week, and I don't remember who it's from, but it's about the like Premier League clubs with a complicity to Israel. I don't know if you saw this. It came out days ago. Basically, they ranked every Premier League team and seeing who who had the most sponsors that were related to like Israeli companies and stuff like that. But so I'm curious about from a shirt perspective, like the stories that and connections that tells, because there's so much. The capitalism is so deeply connected to this sport, and it becomes a thing where everybody, even I think a lot of fans have to think about like how do we manage or compartmentalize supporting our club and also seeing what the business of the club is tied to.
Yeah, so I'm always pretty adamant that like you shouldn't be as a football fan. Like I'm a football fan from old enough to know what's going on. I'm not going into Aston Villa and the final kind of tortured about the sponsors and thinking, like I don't think that's a healthy way to go about your life. But I think it's like you can do both things at once. I mean, I think there are some particularly egregious examples. For example, Newcastle United being owned by the Saudi government.
Yeah.
I think it's quite bad. But I don't think, you know, football fans should be walking around like flagellating themselves about every, you know, or because also like that's not the reason you get into sport as a kid, right? It's sort of thrust upon you from at a later age. So I don't think people should be going in it like that. But I think it's good to kind of have your eyes open and, you know, and particularly this incredibly political World Cup that we're walking into right now.
I got you.
You got me again.
You're doing this in the whole thing.
All the clips are going to be yours.
He's basically wearing a balaclava, but it's his hand.
I'm on the run.
What I mean, you mentioned Newcastle, and one of the first things I think of when I think of the Newcastle shirt is the Newcastle beer sponsor.
Yeah.
Isn't that
really cool in New York, Newcastle Brown Ale? I remember coming here like 8 years ago and in some bar in Brooklyn, I was like, what? That's what old men drink.
I love Brown Ale. I remember Palm was like a big one.
It's very uncool in England.
I'm aware when I went to England, I'm like, Newcastle, right, folks? And they're like, what, are you going to go play dominoes after this? But why do you think the beer sponsors went away? Do you think that was smart? Because it seems like they were replaced by like some betting company that don't even exist
for crypto.
A while.
I've done a lot of work on all the crypto stuff, and there's a lot of that in the book. I went to Turkey, to Istanbul, and interviewed a guy who lost all his money on a Paul Pogba NFT. Do you remember what those are, NFTs?
Yeah, of course.
He lost all his money?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty sad. Like,
It said that he spent all his money on a Paul Pogba NFT.
Yeah, it's just bleak because he, but these things are all advertised by these incredibly wealthy footballers.
He's like, honey, it's a JPEG, but it's only mine, but everybody has it as
well. No, this one is smoking a cigarette. What do you mean you downloaded it off the internet?
It's a dragon.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Just remembered about this.
Hold on, that guy lost all his money on a Paul Pogba thing.
Yeah, that's good. But beer's gone because it's not actually banned. People often think it's banned. It's not. It's just like marketing to kids. And another interesting thing, it's a lot of Muslim players now, and this isn't to say that they're saying don't have beer, but if Mo Salah, Liverpool was sponsored by Carlsberg for such a long time, and I'm sure there would have been all sorts of debates. And Mo Salah's an example of someone who's, while being a proud Muslim, has integrated very incredibly well into British life. And so, you know, but the beer was not a part of any conversation, but like it would have been.
Yeah.
And now that these clubs have changed to massive multinational, you know, Standard Chartered is an interesting one, Liverpool's sponsor, because
it's a construction company, correct?
It's a bank.
Bank.
But there are no customers in the UK. It's headquartered in London, but it's not, the retail customers are in South America, places like Egypt, places like Brazil, where Bobby Firmino, they're advertising to these global fan bases right now. And it's the same with, you know, Arsenal and Emirates, or Manchester United and Snapdragon, or Tottenham and AIA, which is an Asian insurance company. So those like biggest clubs, the reach is completely global now. And that's changed in the last like 10 years. Yeah.
Do you think, I've seen a lot of the beer brands come out with 00 or non-alcoholic beer. Estrella Galicia is one of them that has like, it's Estrella Galicia, but there's like a little 0-0 at the bottom.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a way around that? Are you comfortable with that as someone who's, you know, mentioned that, you know, it's probably not great to have little kids running around wearing beer shirts?
Well, it's funny. If you're like a lot of my friends who grew up Liverpool fans or Tottenham fans, they'll have photos of them as kids in Carlsberg or Holsten shirts, you know, like a three-year-old. No, it's a way around that. It's firstly, it's, I think in Muslim countries, it's a big thing. You know, if you're on TV and you're advertising beer and that's forbidden in whatever country, I think that might be an issue. But if it's 0.0, it's a way. But I think Paul Pogba a few years ago was once at a press conference and there was a load of beers put in front of him. And he said, you know, I don't want to be involved in that. So I think it's something that people are having to think about now.
The first one I remember was a Newcastle player. I can't remember his name now, but the shirt sponsor was Wonga, which was, I guess, in Muslim religion, you're not allowed to have arrears. And it was like a, if I remember correctly.
Was it Frederick Canute?
It might have been, but if I remember correctly, Wonga, it was like a payday loan. And
it was really controversial.
It was called loan sharking in where I grew up, but apparently now it's legal and it's called payday loan. But yeah, he almost refused to wear, but I think they did a workaround. I think they gave him a blank shirt. I don't remember the story completely.
I mean, this very occasionally happened with like gambling, but I think you kind of sign those rights away when you get paid a ridiculous amount of money a week. I mean, and all, like Emirates is a pretty questionable in some respects because it's the state airline of Dubai, which is all sorts of human rights issues and whatever else. I mean, I write about Emirates. I think Emirates is interesting because it's not just a shirt sponsor. It's literally, you know, I used to live a mile away from the Emirates and it's just part of the geography of London. And my flatmate who had no interest in football couldn't name an Arsenal player. They know the Emirates. So it's just part of the geography of a city. And the same with the Etihad. And when those sponsorships run for 10, 20 years,
it just becomes like a colloquial part of the,
But you could do that because the stadium was new. If you named Anfield the, you know, American Airlines Anfield, no one would ever call it that.
Yeah.
Because it's been there for 100 years. But when it's new, it's really powerful.
See, it's the opposite here. I mean, like, we know it as MetLife, the stadium that's going to host the final.
Yeah.
That's an insurance company, but that's MetLife.
Well, yeah.
That was new, right?
It's a new building that was built. Yeah, but even the old one was Giant Meadowlands Stadium for a while, and then it changed. I can't remember what it changed.
It was Giant Stadium. Before.
It was Giant Stadium, but it was Meadowlands was the complex, but then they got a sponsor, and people still said Giant Stadium because it was classic, but people will change with the times here.
Well, and if in the U.S., if like stadiums don't have sponsors attached, we think it's like a weaker...
You broke.
You're a loser.
You're a loser team. You can't get a multinational conglomerate to give you money, dude.
Why can't you get a Dodger sponsor?
I think the same of football clubs that end up starting, like Chelsea, when they started the season without a shirt sponsor.
Yeah, I mean, that's embarrassing.
Well, that's often just holding out for too high a price. So Nottingham Forest, a couple of seasons ago, had the United Nations Refugee Council, which obviously a very nice gesture, but it was because they set the price so high, no one would pay it. And then halfway through the season, they're like, you know what? Should we get some good publicity?
The market has spoken.
Yeah. Remember when Barcelona did UNICEF? Because they're like, we are the national shirt of Catalan. And then all of a sudden it was like Qatar Airways.
So that's a whole chapter in the book. Because that 6 years, so sorry to bring it up, the 2006 Champions League final.
Yeah, where they cheated. Yeah.
That was the last game of no sponsor.
Yeah.
Where Messi was on the bench, I think. And then they unveiled UNICEF. Not just a nice sponsor, but the best club football team of all time was wearing UNICEF. But then was, if you remember, the Qatar Foundation.
Yeah.
And it's quite weird. Like, what is the Qatar Foundation? Like, it's kind of a charity. But people have said since it was just about getting the word Qatar on the shirts.
Yeah.
And it was the same month, December 2010, that the World Cup was given to Qatar. But then quickly, Qatar Foundation became Qatar Airways. The UNICEF thing now looks a bit cynical because it was like, were you just getting people used to having a logo on the shirt? Because if you go straight from blank to Qatar Airways, it's whoa. So it's kind of like, but that's like 5 years, 2006, blank, 2011, Qatar Airways. That's sort of
crazy.
Softly. Yeah. And it kind of helps when that's also the best football team of all time.
Yeah. Like, MSN wore Qatar Airways.
It's like Aston Villa today just put up ticket prices by 5%. And, you know, everyone's still drunk from Istanbul. So it's like,
funny strategy. It's like, you know, throw babies into a wood chipper foundation, but it says don't. It says don't real small.
We didn't tell them to.
It said don't do it.
Yeah.
So you on when I was looking up your book, one of the topics about it that came up was about I think was it the women's national team or the I don't know if it was like just it described it as like social issues related to the women's national team. So I'm curious about that topic because the first thing that comes to mind when I read that was, about football being banned, especially.
That story, which I kind of knew a bit, but I went and researched it. I went to the National Football Museum in Manchester, where they have a load of the archives there, and it's the phrase is not suitable for females. It's like the phrase on this.
Wow.
So what happened?
Wait, you know, I'm almost so surprised that there's a museum in England that has only stuff from England in it. That's impressive. That's impressive.
Well, like, you can see the whole world.
But you were saying about the
ones. Yeah, they. God, I feel like I should apologize for that. It's not my fault.
No, no, no. We're comedians.
I'm sure my great grandparents did.
We're comedians. I'll tell them. So
in the 1914, World War One, men went off to fight. Left in England, there's like kids, old men, and women. And so women who had played football kind of informally, suddenly they were attracting these massive crowds. And there's the Dick Kerr Ladies was the team, a factory in Preston in Lancashire. And at Goodison Park, the former Everton Stadium, they were getting like 50,000 people. Yeah. And then the men came back and then they was like, we don't like it. It's unladylike. People literally thought it would like do, you know, you couldn't have a baby if you ran around. Like sort of medical. It gets quite weird.
A guy with those like curvy pipes I'm not sure they can ever get pregnant. They're going to grow dicks. Right. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not a doctor. Maybe he was right. But like they came back and they banned it. And they wrote, so they banned them from using FA grounds. And it was 50 years, it was till the 1970s that they lifted the ban. And of course, women's football was just like, you know, if you start it from literally no one even has played it for 50 years, there's like, it takes decades for it to build. So the US is actually, like, I'd say the biggest influence in world football as we know it today is like kick-starting the women's game, which was actually, do you know the story about Nixon title?
Title 19.
Yeah, which was huge. And it was like kind of accidental, right? So like, it was...
They weren't like, hey, let's build up women's football.
It was an equal rights...
Like clause or amendment.
And it basically said, if you're a public institution, you have to offer things equally to men and women. But what that meant was colleges who were doing sport, and it was like all men's sport, mm-hmm. were like, shit, we have to... do I have to beep out swearing?
No. you love this thing.
What's that one?
Yeah, that's just our...
We're on Yahoo Sports.
Yeah, this is the shocking one.
God, you should have done that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got to, I can't just drop that in willy-nilly. You know?
And if we talk about the men's national team in US,
a couple eagle screech.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
And you know.
What's the thing they shout?
I believe that
it's called soccer. No.
A British word. Did you put that in your book?
Yeah. I know. I'm not soccer shaming. I know a lot.
We didn't go over there and produce a show called Soccer AM or Soccer Saturday.
True,
yeah.
It's true. Yeah. God, what was saying?
Title nine.
You were saying how women shouldn't play the sport, right?
Yeah.
Is that where we were?
Just bad things to their body. I think it's disgusting.
He's kidding.
No, vulgar. Title nine. They all these American colleges were like, we have to suddenly do a load of sport for women, and it's like all your traditional sports take up a lot of equipment. You know, American football, basketball. You need a court.
Yeah,
it's expensive to build. Football, soccer, you just need a bit of grass and some like bibs.
Yeah,
like which is basically the reason why it's like this virus that has infected every corner of the world. Where other sports, no other sport is anything more than like a few countries, right?
Yeah,
because it's easy to play, it's easy to follow. You'd be like in the corner of a bar, half watching. The scoring's really simple. Like on the radio, it works.
Not a lot of rules either. It's easy to understand.
Like, there's really few. And like, if you look back, like if you read to the history of it, the rules have changed remarkably little since like 1900. Yeah, of course, there have been tweaks to offside rules and whatever, but it's really simple. And you can play it in like an alleyway. You can play it in so it's cheap and it's easy. So all these colleges suddenly made massive women's soccer programs. And then really quickly, by like the 80s, they were really pretty good. And they kind of had no one to play against in there. They just won the World Cups really easily. But suddenly you had these huge, quite advanced, like in high schools as well, this huge ecosystem of women's football, which didn't exist anywhere else until much, much later.
Yeah, I mean, we've had several of the women's national team players. Like for us, we have the 99ers, right? So these were the women's national team that basically put women's soccer like on
was
the
that
map.
Hosted here?
That was
yeah, it was yeah, here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember Brandi Chastain ripping her shirt off when she scored
the penalty against China. I interviewed her once.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Nice.
So
that changed everything.
When you hear how they spoke about what soccer was like in the 80s and how they developed into like who they were, like they it came from, I mean, it's nice. The stories of like the Title IX equality was great, but like as soon as those players became professional, it was a nightmare. They had almost no resources. Yeah. They had to wash their own shirts.
They had to iron the badges onto their own shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of those
stories, even for the World Cup. True story. It's crazy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's remarkable where it's gone.
And when you talk to I know quite a few women who write about football, and they say like, there's often a tendency to try and really just be like, everything's great, isn't it brilliant? Yeah. Aren't there those women just, you know? And it's like actually,
they never
just
want
a lot
to criticize. It's very difficult. Yeah. Difficult to toe that line, because you also don't want fans to be like, you're being overcritical. And on this show, even when we started, we said we're going to talk about everyone exactly the same, and that's led to people leaving comments like, why are you being so disrespectful? It's like, had a bad game.
You know, that doesn't I think that's important. Yeah. And well, so one of the things I talk about in the book is Mary Earps. I don't know if you followed that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So that's a football shirt. Yeah. So she wouldn't wear so she, the England goalkeeper, so the England who won the Euro. So I was there at Wembley for the final in 2022. And that was the kind of, if your breakout was 99, ours was 2022.
Yeah.
But she was the brilliant goalkeeper who was kind of the hero of that tournament. But then in the World Cup, one of the kids of one of her teammates said, oh, we want to buy the goalkeeper shirt, but they don't, Nike aren't stocking it. So it became this huge like thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then they
yeah.
had to like furiously like...
Yeah,
and it sold out pretty quickly from what I remember.
There was a clip that went viral of her parents. I think her parents were on the tube or something, on a train wearing the shirt. And then somebody was like, oh, where'd you get that? I went to buy it. And he was like, oh, that's my daughter or something like that.
Right.
I must have seen this like 2 years ago.
They beat him up for it.
They have a Bloody Mary Earp jersey now.
Bloody Mary.
How come in a Bloody Mary? Come on, man. All right. Good pun. It's a good pun. Why do you think in England we don't see the shirts that I have this like adoration for South American shirts that are like, do you know what a NASCAR is?
I know what a NASCAR is.
You know how they're completely covered in multiple tiny
NASCAR,
sponsorships?
It's so like alien to me.
Yeah, same.
It seems
so
exotic.
Yeah, really? It's really very much like, that. So a bunch of guys turning left.
it's like if I was to say cricket, would you have a similar like...
I know what it is, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm not exactly. Yeah, a wicket, bro? Nah, man. Yeah, strike that or not. But
Indy 500?
Yeah, there you go. Wow. But it's just a bunch of tiny sponsors. And I have a couple shirts people have sent me. I have one, a Montpellier shirt that has like maybe 15 sponsors on it. And I'm like, how come this never caught on in England? I'm sure Wrexham could probably get 45 more sponsors on their shirts if they really wanted to, or some championship club that could use the extra money.
Yeah, you occasionally see like the sleeve sponsor.
Sleeve in front. That's about maybe bottom of the back.
I mean, I basically, what I think has gone on here is a slightly different sort of economic evolution of, but if you the more sponsors you have, the less value the front of shirt sponsor will be, right?
Well, that's a good point.
So that's probably the reason.
Right. Yeah. It seems like, you know, obviously the Premier League brings in the most money because of the exclusivity around every single, even on the digital boards, even on the shirts themselves. Like sometimes in Mexico, it's common to have a ton of sponsors.
Be like a liquor one.
But I can see the strategy of just like, nah, this is an exclusive club, or even Chelsea not putting a sponsor on there, being like, no, we'd rather accept no money at all. Just to sort of prove a point that this is how much it costs to get in the door.
So you've actually reminded me of one of the crazy stories from Colombia, where it was Envigado FC. So they gave the world James Rodriguez, John Duran, Quintero, this sort of, but they're like, no, I went there, and it's where Pablo Escobar is from. Mm. And they were owned by drug cartels so they had the dead gangster's face on the back. But so I saw guys walking around with these quite old shirts and there was no sponsors, but that wasn't because like Barcelona, they're really ethical. It's because they were sanctioned by the US government.
And they couldn't accept
the Clinton list. It's like the foreign bad actors. And what that means is if you're like a soft drink company in Colombia and you sponsor this club, you're suddenly like, your bank account gets frozen.
Exactly. You're like, banned from doing business in the US, which is a big deal.
Which is something the US abuses sometimes. Yeah, it's not great.
No, what are you talking about? I've never done anything wrong internationally.
Yeah, you put your sponsor on and then you're like bundled into the back of a van on your way home.
I have a bunch of older like English shirts and I refuse to wear, you know, clubs that I would say British shirts because I have a lot of Scottish. Mm. And I love like every once in a while you'll see something with like a scaffolding company.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love all that.
Some random. I'm like, you learn about the world this way in a very different way. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the romance of it. Like, and people, I think people feel really, when I've done events like in England and you speak to sort of older people, people love the sort of, I mean, Southampton was Draper Tools.
Yeah.
Aston Villa was Muller Yogurt.
The yogurt?
Yeah.
What was the Everton one? It was like a Dutch name or something. And he's a big Everton fan. So we did a tour of Goodison Park before it closed. And he's like, oh yeah, it's a Swedish or a Dutch meat company.
I don't know. And I don't remember. I mean,
it's like Henta.
Oh yeah. I remember what they did. Yeah.
And they're like, that's a Dutch meat company that found us in a book.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, what?
Yeah, so if you go back and you remember, it's like before the internet, it was so like ad hoc. It would be like, you know, and football clubs in England until the last 20 years will run, but in a really kind of amateur way. It was just, the chairman was just some guy who was losing loads of money, but kind of liked entertaining his friends in a, you know, it's universe across the world been a terrible business decision, which
horrible.
Some American guys now think they've cracked the code.
Yeah.
Well, time will tell whether it's right. I mean, Chelsea, like the biggest gamble in sports history.
Right.
But these were just some guy, some local guy who was quite rich, but not that rich. And someone would ring him up and say, can I give you like £5,000 to put my Dutch meat company on your shirt? And he'd be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know how you got my number, but yeah.
Hey, boys, beers on me today. Got some Dutch meat company just called. That's been so impressive. I mean, you know, just sort of where we've come to where we are now, where nations and oil states are like sports washing off the front of an English shirt.
So there's a good Everton one, which is, you remember Li Tai, the Chinese player from 20 odd years ago?
Yeah.
And he's now like, so that was a Chinese Kejian, which is like, no one really knows what it is, some sort of electronics company, which again was pretty ad hoc. Some Chinese guy was like, here's some money. And it's probably before they could do research, but it's all a bit murky. But Li Tai was then, he's kind of the most famous Chinese footballer ever, probably played in the Premier League, had some really good season. I interviewed some of his former teammates and they all said he was a great guy, but he got some injuries. He then became manager of the Chinese national team. And the story of the Chinese football is this incredible like bubble that burst.
Yeah.
And he was basically personally blamed for the failures of it. And he's now in prison for corruption. He's like 30 years in jail.
Oh, damn.
Wow.
But it's like in a police state like China, like who knows? Like,
yeah.
And there's this culture of like gift giving, which means that probably everyone is kind of corrupt by the strictest definition of it. Because to get anything done, you have to.
Yeah.
But like this huge footballer is now just rotting in prison. And China's given up on football. They've just backed out.
Yeah. So, I remember they signed Tevez for like 600,000 pounds a week or something.
Oscar was a weird
Paulinho,
one.
A couple people stayed there though. A couple people stayed there and made a little bit of a career for themselves because
was there a long time.
Oscar just like just left or fairly recently.
But Tevez, he was like too old for Boca because he had gone back to Boca and then he goes and signs with China.
I was at Boca 3 months ago and Cavani was there and it was sad. He was 39, walking around and just getting booed by the whole crowd. I was like, man, this is probably not even getting paid that well.
not a Boca.
It's funny because
anything to have that
from
shirt, I guess.
From like a basketball perspective and NBA, former like NBA players go to China and become brand name.
Stephon Marbury has a statue
in China. Mm. Like people,
was he playing in China?
He was playing.
He's an American who kind of got in trouble for. There was something happened at the Knicks. So he played for the Knicks and it wasn't great. Didn't work out well. But there was something with the front office where like they were letting him like do whatever he wanted. His friends were like smoking weed or something in the office.
Like the Balotelli.
Yeah, he kind of did whatever he wanted. And then
missed that guy.
Yeah. Great guy. Why always me? But then he left
the fireworks through the window?
Yeah, of course.
But
he went and played in China and he's a god there, bro. He was so good, so much better than
everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, surely you're just dominated.
But he's married to a Chinese woman. He does Chinese TikToks. He speaks fluent Chinese. He's like a guy. People walk. He's not even that tall, and people walk around. They're like, "Oh my god!" He's a black dude in China. He's probably gonna stand out a little bit. But I mean, everybody loves him.
I could stop traffic.
But they might think you're Stephon Marbury. I'll be honest with you, they don't know any different. But it's incredible to see sort of this turn of like he was like a bad boy here, and he's like a family, like a household name there.
He speaks very glowingly of China because it completely changed his life.
By the way, we love China. Big fans.
Potential sponsor.
Yeah. You started talking about Gazprom. I know we have to run, but are any clubs still sponsored?
Red Star Belgrade, which again tells you a really interesting part of the, you know, Russia-Ukraine war. So like what I've tried to do with a couple of these is be like, let's talk about the Russia-Ukraine war, which is this complicated thing about politicians, but like through football. So you've got the rise and fall of Germany and its relationship with Russia, but then 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine, Gazprom pulled off the shirts. Everyone's like apologizing for their relationships with Russia. Belgrade, Red Star Belgrade, they just crack on. They love Russia.
Yeah.
They're like
good folks out there.
And they
what'd they do wrong? I didn't hear.
And the Serbian fans chant like Rossiya in the stands because they're like Orthodox Christians, so much more culturally similar. Yeah, yeah. So, I just love how football just kind of brings up all these stories. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, it's look, crazy. It's I think from even our perspective and from the stuff I've read, like the American sports are just not. I mean, there's clearly the ties, but it's much more. Tribal's not the word, but it just seems like a fun family thing to kind of do, and
it doesn't feel like an identity.
We never get the veil sort of pulled of like how this all kind of works, and
also we're much more consumers.
More domestic. It's much more. It's like 98% domestic, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, it's not global, as in the US.
Yeah.
NFL like most, is just
yeah. I mean, we have like some teams in Canada.
I watched
like
it in Madrid actually, Miami Dolphins against. I don't remember who, but it was fun. Yeah.
It's fun.
I got that song stuck in my head.
It takes a little bit longer. Yeah.
No, nice. But I
the clothing is pretty cool too.
I can't wait to read the book because I know there's a lot of stuff I would be fascinated to learn more and more about.
Just some of the stuff that you've already shared just in this interview is intriguing. I can't imagine what's left in the book.
Yeah, but credit to you for. I mean, it's not just you weren't just sitting on your laptop at home kind of writing. You really did a lot of investigative journalism and went to all these places and any particular moments that stand out from the your investigative work and talking to people? Any moments that
I'm already worried for you if you're
one moment sticks in my head. I was in Qatar and I went just before the tournament on an official trip, and I, as a British journalist, it was such a big thing in the British press, the human rights in Qatar, the workers, the people that died building the stadiums, really, it was constant. And I was like, I cannot go back to England without asking this question. So I was like, all the other journalists with me were from Asia and Africa. I was the only European. And I put my hand up and I was like, and everyone looked at me like, what? Are you mad? And the guy was like really annoyed with me, but it made me really rethink actually. I think a lot of the people view that as sort of colonialist, as the sort of relationship of England and world football, is actually a really fractious thing. And I was in Brazil recently and there was a lot of people kind of this idea that the English are still feel like they have ownerships of football. And
your fans. It's your fans in the comments.
Yeah. But like, and now I think it's quite interesting with the runaway growth of the Premier League that is.
Well, what did you ask in Qatar?
Oh, it's just like, what about all the workers that died? You know, I had to ask that.
Yeah, of course.
But everyone was like, what? Like, this is an amazing stadium. But all the guys from like Africa were like, this is great. It's a World Cup in a place where we can get a visa, where we can fly to, where it's already. But like all the people who were building those stadiums were from India.
Nepal.
I was just in Senegal and they like loved the Qatar World Cup. They could all go there. So it's like, and they see it as part of their like global South world or whatever.
Yeah.
Not like England where it's like everyone's a bit snobby. And so I don't know. Yeah. I have no like formed view on it, but I'm just sort of always.
But you
got out of there safe because you're here.
It goes to, it makes me think about even our role in this space where there's a, we have friends that are lots of journalists, but there's a balance of like, you want to ask the important questions, but you also need access to be able to have the opportunity to even ask some of those questions. And it takes some genuine bravery to just be. We've been in press conferences and I can understand the other journalists being like, why are you asking something like that? Because this is great. Why ruin this?
Yeah.
This experience. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, we let's be for real, like a little bit. That's kind of like when I look at, if your book was called Be For F***ing Real, like I'd be like we have to accept that it's not all just like that great goal, that great moment. And
unfortunately, the game isn't just the 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I guess I don't care about access. I don't get any and I don't need any. Oh, so yeah. I don't mind just throwing rocks in there.
We've learned that. Yeah, you're a guitar going, let me ask the one question everyone's afraid to ask.
Well, it's not really that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll pay for my own tickets when I see, I think both have a place, you know, like it can't be, there's lots of different roles for different people.
All right. So then last question, what's your favorite shirt of all time?
Well, I have a new one. It's Aston Villa Foundation.
Yeah.
Not the dodgy gambling sponsor because
they couldn't wear it. They couldn't wear it in Europe.
And it's kind of crazy for me because deeply rooted in my identity is supporting this like crap team that never wins anything. Yeah. I haven't won anything for 30 years. And I just was there a week ago. Best night of my life. I'm still a bit dizzy from it. And now I'm in New York. What's going on?
Well, no, congrats, buddy. You deserve it.
Ollie Watkins has been fantastic, man. Yeah. A great player to watch. And so, all right. Well, congrats, man.
Dude,
all right.
You got so
some good
thank
news.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah,
thanks for sharing the book.
Awesome, man. Everybody go
thanks
pick up more than a
available
shirt.
On Amazon and everywhere you can pick up books.
Yep.
Amazon also never did anything wrong. go pick up Joey Durso, More Than a Shirt. Thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Cheers, brother.